Come, walk down the winding path. Don't mind the spooks and monsters. They stay hidden within the trees. There are mysteries in this world that you need to know, and paranormal truths that need to be told. Come, step up into the caravan, where we share tales of old, as well as new accounts about things you thought only existed in your nightmares.
Oh, well, hello, and welcome to another edition of The Caravan Library of Lore, where I've made my way down the dark and windy path and stayed away from the spooks and monsters and... Oh, it's okay, boy. It's okay. Yeah, it's a good boy. Anyway, I've stayed away from the spooks and monsters, but I've arrived at Lady Anne's Caravan. And tonight, we're joined by a very special guest, who traveled all the way from a hilltop in the mossy bottoms of the deep south of Arkansas, Joe Roop, of Lighting the Void Radio on the Fringe FM. And we're going to just discuss whatever topics may banter about within the walls of the caravan. So let's go inside and join the conversation.
I started a podcast a long time ago. And I called it White Trash Guru, right? And it flopped, like just totally flopped. And so I experienced failure, and I didn't like it. So I really got into studying the, you know, how to do all this stuff, and started doing Lighting the Void once a week, then twice a week, and then a few people wanted me to do it more, and then so I started the Fringe FM with a buddy of mine, Dave Cruz. I think it was like January of 16. Time goes by so fast, but I'm pretty sure it's a little over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's, you know, now I'm doing Lighting the Void 5 nights a week, and then we've got the Fringe FM. It's got a ton of other shows on it, and it's just kind of taken off from there. It's been growing ever since.
Well, it has been a huge success. So then let me ask you, when you first started doing Lighting the Void, did you do it in a podcast format, record it, and then air it, or were you always doing live?
Yeah, I started out doing a podcast format, then I tried live, like YouTube, and recorded, but I always wanted to do the radio format style, because I liked when I heard, obviously everybody says this, but when I heard Art Bell, I was like, wow, yeah, this is fun. This is what I want to do eventually, one day.
It is fun, isn't it?
Yeah, and then he just, he quit, and came back, and quit again, and I was like, yeah, this is, I'm not finding what I'm looking for here. So I just started doing it myself, you know.
Well, kudos to you for doing that and stepping up to the mic, so to speak, and picking up the baggage where it got left off at. So when was your first introduction to Art Bell? Because we'll talk a few minutes about Art Bell, not the entire show, but we'll talk a few minutes. I'm always interested in how people were introduced to Art Bell. Was it just accidental, or did somebody turn you onto it?
Well, a friend of mine turned me onto it. It was the first actually podcast I did with a guy named Stephen Ash, and I was really into the occult and magic, and I had heard rumors about that there was much more to this guy than everybody than he put on. And he told me, he said, you know, one of these days you're gonna end up like the grandiose Art Bell, you know, or John B. Wells. And I was like, well, who's that? And he was like, are you serious? You know, I was like, yeah, I don't know who that is. And so I looked up Art Bell, and that was it. And I was a late, like, I came into it late. And then I went back and started listening to all the archives, and I was like, I can't believe I missed this. It's kind of like missing out on something for years.
Yeah, I mean, I was privileged enough. A friend turned me onto it. We were working, or he was working overnights, and I would go and visit him because he worked in a data vault. And I'm not giving away too much information, but we would be there, you know, pretty late at night, midnight hour. And he'd flip the radio on, and you know, you ever hear this show? And of course, that music, everybody on the planet that's in paranormal radio would love to be able to have that music for their own back pocket, because his opening music is just, it was perfect. It set the tone for what you were about to experience. And of course, you know, I would tell other friends, man, this is like X-Files on the radio. It's fantastic. Did you ever hear this show? And people weren't into it. I'm like, well, this is cool because now Art Bell belongs to me. This is my thing. It belongs to me. And I'm the only one that will get to enjoy this. I won't share this with anybody else. But then as the years progressed on, more and more people that I would run into were talking about some of the shows that he had, some of the bigger shows that were notorious with Art Bell, you know, the Area 51 caller that was claiming, you know, that he's being... And who knows if any of that has any reality behind it or not, or if it was a hoax, and then he was getting threats, and all this craziness was going on. And so more and more people started getting involved in what the Art Bell show was all about. Now, this is really cool. But it was only 2-3 days ago, I was speaking to a coworker, and I have no idea. This gentleman just didn't look the part at all. He asked me straight up. He's like, so what's your day look like? And I'm like, well, it's pretty busy. You know, I got to push a lot out today. And then I'll be behind the microphone. And he's like, whoa, what do you mean? You sing? I'm like, no, we do a paranormal podcast. And he's like, really? Well, that sounds interesting. You know, I used to listen to Art Bell all the time. And then I went over to George Norrie, and he could rattle off just about every episode. And I'm like, dude, you're amazing. Here's the information if you want to continue to listen to all these paranormal podcasts. And I gave him a list, and of course, Lighting the Void is on that list. And he was like, wow, I really appreciate it, you know, because I do look for stuff like that. Listen when he's out driving. So it makes it more entertaining for him, and it certainly kind of lit me up inside to know that, yet there's somebody else that we have that common connection with. Lady Anne, what was your first experience with Mr. Bell?
My grandpa, actually. He was, you know, the one that showed me Art Bell and Edgar Allan Poe and, you know, all that great stuff.
Did you listen to it together? Or?
No, he just turned me on to it. He would tell me different stories that were on the show, you know, things that he had heard. But no, we never ended up listening to it together.
Well, either way, that's okay. So that wraps up our Art Bell segment. Rest in peace, sir. Godspeed. He is terribly missed. And there's a lot of other people that have always said, man, I would like to be or the next person. So you could be the next Art Bell. Art Bell will never be replaced. In my opinion, he'll never be replaced. He started something new. He went in a new direction with it that nobody else has ever done. And I don't know that those shoes will ever be filled. But he certainly opened the gates for all of us to flood in and do our own thing. And so to Art Bell, he is the godfather of paranormal radio. And I don't think any of us would probably be doing this if it wasn't for him. So kudos and Godspeed. So you have a couple questions, don't you, Jen? Lady Anne?
I do. That's fine. Joe, I was wondering, you've got like over 300 episodes, right?
Yes, yeah.
That you've put out?
It's, I think I'm at like 360 something now, yeah.
Right, so that's a lot. Now, do you have any out of all of those that were your, I guess, most memorable? Something that really stood out that is your favorite?
Boy, yeah. I don't, you know, that's, that is a very good question, because that's hard to, there's quite a few, actually, that I feel connected to. I would say the first time I spoke to John Anthony West was a big deal for me. Because we were talking about a guy that was a satirist, you know, he wasn't a big time academic type person. He just did tours of Egypt. He was a really good researcher, super famous, and it wasn't really about the conversation, although that was the great part of it. It was just the fact that, man, this was the first time I got to speak to somebody who I never imagined I would get to speak to. Even when I was at work, I remember I was at my job at Verizon, and I was walking between breaks, and someone called me from New York, and I was like, who's this? And I picked up the phone, and he said, hey, is this Joe Rupin? I said, yeah. And he goes, this is John Anthony West. And I was like, get out of here. and I actually hung up on him, you know. You know?
Oh, wow.
And then he called me back.
That's awesome.
And he goes, no, I'm serious. This is John Anthony West. I was like, what? You know? And my boss is flagging me to come back in, and I'm pretty much giving him the bird, kind of like, no, not going to happen this time.
Wow.
I would like to think every conversation I feel like I have with people is fantastic, but it's those moments that really, those exciting moments when you make some kind of breakthrough that are more memorable for me, I think.
Well, especially if you get the call, that's fantastic.
You know what I'm saying? Surreal. It didn't seem right or real to me, you know. And to others, he probably isn't that big of a deal, but just seeing him on Rogan a few times and then having him called me was different. You know, it made me feel, I don't know, special, I guess. You know what I'm saying? It was a good feeling.
Yeah, you are special, Joe. You know that.
That makes sense.
And if you don't know that, well, I'm going to tell you. You are special. And in the good radio way, you have a gift, and I envy that gift. But, yeah, you're very special, and you're going places, my friend. I know what you mean by having him call you. I kind of felt that way when Linda Godfrey, you know, reached out and was willing to do the show with us.
Oh, you got to speak with her? I still haven't got to speak with Linda, and I want to really bad.
She's a tough cookie to be able to nail down to get an interview, but she is the sweetest woman that walks the face of the earth. She's just absolutely adorable, and she will give you her time, and she's so courteous with everybody, all the listeners, and she wanted to make sure that she thanked every listener that was listening to the show and gave all the information, and she was just an absolute joy to speak with. So that was a really memorable moment for the Caravan of Lore. All right, next question.
So building off of that,
before I throw one at you.
Oh boy. No, so building off of that, if you could have anybody in the world, anyone, who would you want to have on your show?
Man, that's a tough one too. You know, the name Duncan Trussell sticks out to me more than anything because I've listened to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour for so long. And I mean, here's a guy that would do a podcast and talk. He talked about everything that it seemed like every time I was involved with something, it would come up on his podcast. And he was the only guy I know that as his mother was passing away, made a podcast out of it. A conversation between him and his mother as she was leaving the earth. And it was the most amazing thing I ever heard. And yeah, I mean, he's got stuff that he would go on Rogan all the time. And I could tell that he's kind of holding back because Joe would always have these logical opinions about spirituality. And he would try to convince him in another way, and he was one of the only people that could actually get Joe to think deeper about something, and always wondered, what's he really hiding, what does he really want to say, you know. I would love to pick his brain.
Yeah, I would too. And I laugh, but I think between all three of us, I think we'd like to do a little brain picking and find out some philosophies and things that I haven't really either figured out or thought of yet.
Yeah, I mean, these guys,
it would be a privilege.
They travel. Every time he comes on, he's got a new story, some new guru he met, and some guy that they go to all these places and have all these experiences. And it's one thing to study and do your own meditations, practices, and rituals. It's a whole nother thing to have that type of life where you can go out and experience these things with different people in different places and then come back and talk about it, you know. And he's done that.
You know, isn't it crazy that some people, and I don't know how they fall backwards into all this. I just don't understand it. I've asked, and sometimes I can't get the answer because it comes naturally to them. But how do you turn this into your full-time thing? I would like to do that full-time thing, but financially I can't. But some people just kind of step right into it, and this is their life, and they sustain just fine. I was like, wow, you're a superstar, and I understand they worked for it, but, you know, there's just some people out there, I scratch my head going, how do I do this full time and still be able to be successful at this? And I understand there's a lot of insecurities with some people that go, well, you know, you don't have that knowledge every week that you're going to get, you know, a certain X amount of dollars. And
that's right.
Some people just don't care. They just don't care. They don't care. And that's what makes them so successful, because they know somehow, some way, this universe will take care of it for them. And they just keep doing what they do, and they're very successful at it. So kudos.
Well, yeah, I get that question a lot. And then any question anybody wants to know about where I'm at and how I got to where I'm at, I'll happily answer in full detail, actually. It's just more, there's a lot of that faith that you're talking about that goes in it, that's involved with it. And when a synchronicity happens, like when you get a support, you can't take it for granted. And I did for so long. I wouldn't believe in, like, okay, that's a coincidence. Well, no, that's a coincidence. No, that's a coincidence. Mm-hmm. After a while, you're like, okay, this isn't a coincidence anymore. Now what do I do, right? So first you have to ask yourself, if you really want to do this for a living, what are you willing to do that others aren't doing? And what are you willing to live without if you really want to do it? Because when I say I'm in a shack, I'm not really joking, kind of. So it's like I left a very comfortable life to do this, and it was scary, you know, and didn't start getting any feedback for a year almost. So it's, you got to be able to, I think, understand the long game too, you know.
Well, I've also heard too, you know, the philosophy that, you know, don't let anybody throw negatives at you. If you know what the path is and what it is you want to do, you push them out of the way and you just keep going. They may say, you're going to be a failure. You don't even bother. You're going to be an absolute failure. Nobody's going to listen to this. No, just stop. And you just have to push that stuff away and keep trudging forward. And the next thing you know, you're successful and they're looking at you going, huh, how did you do that?
Right.
Well, you got my way. I had to push you out of the way in order for it to make that happen. Okay. Well, I just got a notification
for me
into the Fray Radio.
I think that when it comes to doing things that you love, you don't think about the money. You just be like, this is what I love and this is what I want to do, and you just go after it. The money will fall into place. Don't focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's see, another thing too that happens is you got to change your whole. I had to change my whole idea about money, which is one of the reasons why I brag so much about magic and all this other stuff, because I changed my whole ideas and beliefs about it. And I was like, so wait, right. So if I don't get enough donations or whatever, let's do whatever I got to do. Let's do the mugs, the t-shirts, the donations. Maybe explicit content, but what else can I do? Take what I've learned and do something else. So that's kind of where the Fringe FM came into play. I was like, so I've learned how to do all these things. Why not make it some type of service? So if somebody has a show, then we can all help each other. But if somebody needs a producer, I can do that too. So it's kind of like the skills that I've learned as I went along doing this allowed me to give value to others too, and it just perpetuated that way.
Right.
Well, I have to say, between Lady Anne and myself, we are thrilled to jump aboard the Fringe FM. And everybody that's listening in the Caravan of Lore, you will be able to find us over on the Fringe FM. And it's rather easy to find, even if you just open up your Google browser, whatever. Just type in the Fringe FM. Even Fringe FM, it'll come up. It'll be in your top of your search, and you can just click on it and link you over to their webpage, and you can listen live to the current shows that are playing, and you'll be able to search your favorite shows, and you'll see what highlights and lowlights there are. So thank you for the Fringe FM and their entire broadcasting staff. I know I posted that over there, and you, Joe, for inviting us over, and I'm completely excited, and I know the Super NRML is going to be over at the Fringe FM probably within a month or so, and all five of us at the are very excited to be part of that platform too. So
yeah,
kudos again, man, all these kudos that are going out tonight. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's
all right. So Lady Anne, who do you want on your show if you had your choice of anybody?
Konstantinos. He's an author Vampires, The Occult Truth, and he also did another book called Werewolf, The Occult Truth. Yeah. I think it'd be fascinating to talk to him. Or that guy, you know, Joe, you had Varla on the other night, and she was talking about some guy that she knew, Sebastian. He's a fangsmith. And it was so funny, because I have a friend that works in a dental office, and I'm just like, oh, look at this. There's fangsmiths, and I want fangs. I just wouldn't want to go through the process of actually getting, you know, the process of getting a crown and having it be a permanent fang, and then, you know, I don't know.
Well, it that's some serious fun, dedication, I can tell you that. If you want to get them full-time fangs, because that just,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the dating world, that cuts you right out, you know, your pie just shrunk, you know, so you've got, if you're looking at a pie chart of people that would date you.
You know what, though?
Yeah, but
that's
think
where
the
it
disciplinary
comes back to the manifesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, think of the disciplinary benefits to it, though. You ain't going to have anybody hassle you, that's for sure.
Yeah, right.
Do a smile. They're hitting the other way, man. We're out. Same thing with the kids. They don't behave. You just give them that smile, and they're like, okay, Mom.
Right.
We'll listen.
Right.
We know better.
Well, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So,
I do have another question.
My go-to. Oh, well, hang on.
Yeah, well, what about Vant?
Go ahead.
Well, who do you want? Who did you want
to talk? What about Vant? Yeah, well, we forgot about the Duke over here.
We did.
I would really love to, and I know it's been exploited, and he'd be hard to get on the show because he just is not willing to do this anymore. He had enough, but I want to speak with Bob Lazar. I want to have that conversation with Bob Lazar. Even though it was back in the 80s when he had his experience at S4 and was working with these craft and have the anti-gravity device and trying to explain it, and the fact that he figured out element 115 before it was even discovered on the element charts. How did a 20-year-old kid know about any of this stuff? I thoroughly believe his story. I very much believe his story. You know, and if you're not familiar with Bob Lazar, you know, he was solicited to go to Area 51, but to the other side, which I think was like 15 miles away, over to a location that he referred to as S4, which they had hangars in the mountainside with 9 UFOs inside those hangars. And it was his job to try to figure out back engineering on how to get this thing to work. And he just knows way too much information that is now starting to come out, that it's provable. Everything he said is now coming to light of, yeah, this exists and this is and this is. So I would love to have a conversation with him. It would be a privilege of a lifetime in this thing. And the whole thing is, I'm not a big UFO guy. There's other things that really spark my interest a little bit more, but being prominent on the surface of that whole subject of ufology, I would love to have a conversation with him.
Hmm.
All right, Lady Anne, question?
No, I was wondering what topic it is that you enjoy the most to talk about, and which one scares you the most, if any?
Well, okay, that's a really good question. Obviously, one of my favorite topics, if you've listened to the show, as I'm a big, mm-hmm. big lover of consciousness exploration, but the occult and magic is one of my favorites, but also mm-hmm. scares me the most. And being a practitioner myself, it's weird, right? Because people think, well, why would you be scared of something that you do? Well, if you talk to any real occultist, or they'll tell you there's some dangers to it. And there's dangers to the psyche. There's dangers right. to it. And it does scare me. It scares me when I talk about it. It scares me when it fascinates people. Because I'm afraid of what would happen to the people, the same thing that happened to me, the dabblers. And there's always, I mean, when you think of the occult, there's always dabblers, right? There's always people that dabble with it a little bit.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be the one that scares me the most, but also the most interesting one for me to talk about.
Lady Anne, what's yours?
Mine?
No, you Shucks. Haven't even thought of an answer for yourself. What?
Well, no, I mean, you can guess which one my favorite is. Vampires, of course.
Yeah, right. That,
you know, well, and
but
I really
what scares
love
you the most?
What scares me the most? I think that the Wendigo and Skinwalkers would, mm-hmm. you know, that's definitely up there, especially with how many encounters there are. And to mm-hmm. really go beyond and think, like, just play with that thought of, okay, let's just say it is real. Without a shadow of a doubt, this is a thing. Holy cow, you know? That would suck. I think that's what I'd be scared of the most. Suck.
I'm not sure suck is a good enough word, but no, I certainly understand what you mean.
right.
Very much.
That's a scary word, skinwalker in itself, right? Just think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. See, right. And there's a lot of, I've heard that you're not even supposed to say the word. That's how powerful it is.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. We've said it 3 times already.
I know. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Right.
I did it. I had to do that. No, and it is.
Okay,
it's
how about
true
you?
In the native law. What's my favorite topic and what scares me the most? Probably my favorite is the cryptid world, but it's not really included with Bigfoot. Bigfoot's kind of down on the bottom of that list. I'm into
right.
other strange cryptids. I'm fascinated with Thunderbirds and this whole Mothman thing. I don't know. I think the mystery of why the human existence has actually carried the... Either it's a rumor or it actually exists. Maybe it's a demon. Maybe it comes from another place. I don't know, but the whole thing fascinates me. But the thing that would scare me the most is probably... you know, rolling over in my bed and looking out the window and seeing a little gray staring back at me.
Ooh.
I would lose her right there. I think that probably is my most terrifying thing. And I think I did an episode with Caravan, didn't we, Lady Anne, where I explained what I thought may have been a Bigfoot experience. I don't know, while camping
right.
with my brother up in the middle of nowhere in right at the, mm-hmm. you know...
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, right on the shores of yeah. Lake Superior in northern Wisconsin, in the middle of nowhere in the woods. And we were just off a fire break, and we heard wood knocks and stuff. But I knew nothing about any of this. I didn't know what we were listening to. It's not until years later you hear about wood knocks and all this crap. But I was in the tent, terrified that we were going to be abducted. I was just like, I'm out here. I'm exposed, and there's going to be this UFO come down. These little grays are going to come take me away, and they're going to do whatever they do to me. And, of course, Fire in the Sky had just come out, and The X-Files was just premiering. So all this stuff was right at the surface, you know, and it was really messing with my psyche. But still, as of today, it's a creepy thing. I just fear the fact that if I ever saw something that small, I can deal with a Godzilla creature. I can deal with a King Kong creature. I can deal with all that because you can see them coming. It's them little dudes that you just don't know where they're hiding and when they're going to come get you. That terrifies me. It's
I had a funny thought, actually. Vance would be the perfect character, like in that Blair Witch type video, you know, that scared look in the tent with the flashlight.
Oh, right.
I don't know if I'm going outside the tent or not, you know, but I'm going to be the one that he would be the one that has to do it, you know, and then end up disappearing.
Yeah, with a real running nose and all shaky and scared and hiding under the blanket. Yeah, I'm a big chicken, Joe. I really am. I'm a big chicken.
Me too.
Which is funny because I know a lot of us are, and yet we talk about it, and we're all good with talking about it. But man, faced with some of these encounters that some of these listeners and have had, or people that reach out and contact these shows that have had, I can't put myself in those shoes without just being mortified with terror. That's scary, some
right.
of these experiences people have had. And my heart goes mm-hmm. out to them. And I think that's probably the biggest reason why I sit behind the microphone here, because I just want to reach my hand out and say, it's okay. You know, I believe you, and it'll be okay. You know, and there's only so much you can offer somebody like that, but at least they know there's a support group out there to at least they can talk to about it. And that's really one thing about the Caravan and other shows that we participate in. That's our philosophy, is however we can reach out and help you, we don't judge. None of us judge, because I'm not there with their experience to say it didn't happen. And I would never do that to somebody. If they said it happened to them, I'm going to go along with it and say, that's terrifying. No, just go ahead and say, hey, right, so, I got something.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand the part about being scared too, because when I got into the occult, one of the things that scared me the most was, demons, like, were these things real? Or are they just parts of us? Because I'd read a lot of books on them, well, they're just shadow aspects of ourselves. And I would open up these grimoires that would show the four kings of hell and their names and the generals, the demonic generals, and all the demons underneath them. And then you had other grimoires that would even tell you what they looked like. I've never told anybody this, and I've always preached against this, like, religiously, but I guess I'll tell you guys, because I love you guys so much, that
Thank you.
I did try something once, and I am not going to say it, because I know somebody out there will pick up that book and go try to do it. And I did have an encounter with a red-eyed black figure that I could hear in my head while I was looking at it. And it was kind of like I had a show the other night where I was talking about tones, and I was asking questions kind of to get people's opinions on it. But this thing, when I saw it, a tone went off in my head, kind of like a bell, if that makes any sense. Like a bell cry, to where I was just frozen and full of fear. And it would just, it's kind of like that, that wee sound that goes in your ear. And the more it looked at me, the more full of fear I couldn't move. I'm even stuttering thinking about talking about it. And I knew that I had one phrase that I could do, one trace of a symbol I could do to get help. And I thought, oh man, they're real. It's real. And my heart was just speeding up. And I'm like, I'm trapped. I know I'm inside the circle, but still, it's like, this thing's got me. That's what it felt like. And I won't go too much into the operation, like I said, because I don't want people to do it. But when it was over, I sat in the circle and just sweat for a long time. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, what just happened? Who can I tell about this? I'm telling you guys about this for the first time, that it is dangerous and those things are real. And since then, I've been trying to figure out, was that thing a part of me? Because if that thing really is a part of me, like some magicians say, and it's not separate, then what is going on with me? Or vice versa, like, if that thing is not a part of me, then we really don't know what's going on at all.
Right. Okay. No, that's a really good question. Is it a part of you? And how do you cleanse it out of you if you don't want it there? What do you have to go through in order to do that? Maybe that's where Catholicism, exorcism comes in, and that's the term that they use. How do you expel it from yourself? But yeah, I think it's almost even more terrifying if it's external and it chose you, to have that. Oh man, that's terrifying. Terrifying just isn't a big enough word. Yeah. It's really not a big enough word, because you're going through an emotional state, and to use words to describe an emotional state, try to describe love. You can't. You can kind of give some sort of an analogy to it through words, but you just can't describe an emotion. But when you're experiencing it,
I can get real nerdy on you with it if you want to kind of help. We're all nerds here, right?
Please do.
To kind of describe it.
Absolutely.
The Lord of the Rings, where the Dark Lord came through for the first time when they thought he was trapped, the Lady of the Wood got in that battle with him, and he was coming through, and she turned it into this dark figure. Yeah, that's what it felt like. Like something was talking to me, trying to put me in a trance, and it just in and out. And I was thinking, I'm dead. I'm going to die. What do I do?
Well, I'm glad the outcome was what it was.
I made it. That's all that mattered to me was I made it out of there.
Well, between the two of you having some crazy stuff, I mean, I've seen, a crazy thing, but it just was not malevolent to me at all. It really wasn't. And I don't even know that I was even recognized in being in that space. And that's a big difference. It was startling, but I wasn't scared. It was certainly startling, though. You know, I saw three shadow figures, and a lot of people see shadow figures out of the corner of their eye, and they turn and, missed it. I looked at three of them straight on, and I watched them walk from one side of a wall to another side of the wall through the wall. And I was like, what did I just experience? And I asked, you know, a coworker, because this was in a place of employment. And I asked, he's like, yeah, I see them all the time. I'm like, really? What is going on here? But the fact that I saw three of them, two were about the same height, and the one, because they were walking in a single file against the wall, and they were just, they weren't black beyond black, not at all. They were just kind of a shadowy, grayish type of figures, but they all three looked hooded and just walked from one side to another, and I am watching them. Wow, that was crazy. But this red eye thing, no. That's a big nope for me.
Yeah, that's I just didn't believe it.
I didn't believe it. I talked to this guy named Frater Sean, and he was a magician, and he talked about invoking angels, and he had some of the most beautiful, his temple was beautiful. The tools that his ceremonial tools that he made were beautiful, and how he described when the angel showed up, how powerful it was, and he just couldn't even get up. And I was thinking, okay, well, I've tried that before. If he's right, I just want to see if there's something on the other side besides what's in my head. Just this once. Mm-hmm. And I've told people my show forever that I would never and have never. That's been a big fat lie. I'll just admit to you. Everybody that gets involved with this tries something stupid once in a while, and I did, you know.
No, it's understandable. I mean, look at, you know, as kids, you know, ooh, what's a Ouija board? Let's mess with it. How much of the Ouija board are you really going to tie into? You know, is it a telephone to, you know, something that we are unfamiliar? I don't know. It's possible. I found it rather interesting how the whole concept of the Ouija board came about to begin with. So there has to be something there, you know, that people are able to communicate somehow. And it's not on the same level in what you are talking about, Joe. It's nowhere near on the same level. But people always, be careful with the Ouija board.
Yeah, right.
You don't know what you're messing with. Well, then heed warning. If you don't know what you're messing with, then just heed warning and kind of step away from it and say, you know, it's a tool. And I'm not prepared for that tool. And I think all too often, like you said at the beginning of your experience, you don't want to share too much information because you don't want people to, you know, get the book and try it.
Exactly.
Because there are people, I'm kind of bored. This is what I want to do. You're not prepared. You are just not prepared. You don't go into battle in t-shirt and jeans. No, you don't. You have your armament and your protection and your protective devices, and you need to mentally prepare and physically prepare for something like that. So
exactly, yeah. You know. You nailed it, man. It'd be the ceremonial magician, you know, is such a old traditional magical system. It goes back to the Renaissance, and it's all about tools. And you see those four elemental tools on the tarot card of the magician. And if you haven't mastered those things, why would you go out and poke demons? Why would you poke at them? You haven't mastered the four aspects of yourself, trying to get to your spirit, and you want to go out and start pulling things out of the ether just for the fun. Yeah, go ahead and see what happens, right? Yeah, so you're right.
Well, I'll back up a little bit because, you know, what you had said about, you know, okay, you saw her with red eyes. And I'll back up to my whole cryptid fascination that all these Mothman sightings, all these witnesses and testimonials that come forth, they all describe the same thing. It was a tall figure with wings, but it had red eyes. So I'm wondering, was this manifested somehow and it's stuck here like a fly stuck in your house and it can't get out,
you know,
and it just, you know, it showed up.
I don't know much about the
Mothman.
That's chilling to me though. Right. Do they talk about like a tones or anything that they hear too?
There is audible noises in some testimonial cases. Yes. Outside of physical noises of either a wing flap or something, but a lot of what I've heard, I don't know about an audible tone, but one case which, you know, a lawyer, I believe it was an attorney and his wife, they left dinner, and this is when the whole Mothman of Chicago flap was going on, and this is downtown Chicago, and they left the restaurant and they were walking back to their apartment right along Lakeshore Drive in downtown Chicago. The woman noticed this thing up in the air, caught her eye, and it came down in front of them. And they were both terrified, but they said the craziest thing was this thing wasn't physically moving its wings to stay aloft. It just had its wings out, but was hovering.
Oh my God.
But it was like vibrating. It was an intense vibration.
Yeah.
And she noticed it primarily at the feet were vibrating at a high rate of speed. Who makes stuff up like that?
Nobody.
And it had red glowing eyes. And then it just shot up out of sight. And there's been, you know, a number of reports like that. And that's the part of it that I'm interested in. There's other aspects. I think people just jumped on board. Ooh, hey, there's a Mothman flap. Well, I'm going to call in a report and make stuff up. And I think that has been the case in some situations in Chicago. I don't think the flap that took place in Chicago comes anywhere close to what happened in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, back in 1967. There's a lot more witnesses and a little bit more physical evidence of something happening there. And if anybody is not familiar listening to this about the Mothman of Point Pleasant, there's a plethora of books on it. John Keel wrote a book about it called The Mothman Prophecies. There was a movie made with Richard Gere called The Mothman Prophecies.
I remember that one. That was a good one.
And then, right. Well, that's all based on what the Mothman is.
Okay. And I thought that was, honestly thought that was made up. I really did. I thought that was just
That was all. That entire story that John Keel wrote was based on what transpired in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. And some of these similar cases are turning up in Chicago. And I'm not trying to turn this into the Mothman thing. I just found it interesting that the red eye seems to be a common denominator, even in some Dogman reports, that it had red glowing eyes. Well, I don't know of any physical flesh and blood creature on this planet that illuminates from its eyes out. And there's others, you know.
Now you know why I want you guys on the network, right? I don't have anyone that is that extensive knowledge of these types of things. I promise you we're all going to learn so much from you guys. So it's, that's fascinating to me. And then it makes me think about, what is a demon? What have we been calling all these demons? Mm-hmm. Like, if you look in these books and they have every single name, are they really all these cryptids that everybody's been talking about? And that's just who they are. They really like ancient beings, you know, who knows?
Well, I do believe that there's a common thread between all of this. I do believe there's a common thread, even in ufology. I think there's a common link with everything that we don't understand in what we refer to as the paranormal or high strangeness. I strongly believe that, and that one somehow is attached with another. Some of it might turn out to be a scientific explanation, and others, it just put your shoulders up and your hands up and go, I don't know. We just don't know. And we'll have the answers once we move on from this plane after this life, and you're done using your body as a shell for transportation purposes. Once you move along, we'll find out those answers. But again, I appreciate those kind words, because this is part of why we are excited to come over to Fringe, because then everybody, we're all taking information from each other and putting it together to come up with a final product. Even though it might not be a final product, it'll be a little bit bigger product than what we have right now. So I can learn from everybody, and hopefully I have something that might be able to offer some knowledge too.
Well, you do, man. You're part of the staff. But I want when you brought up the Fringe FM staff, but I wanted the caravan. Mm-hmm. I wanted you and Lady Anne. I wanted both of it. You know, and you guys have become already such good friends to me. And when I interviewed Varla Ventura, I was intimidated, right? Because here's a writer that knows about so many things of folklore. And, you know, Lady Anne is like just throwing these questions out, and like, this is what she's talking about. This is the, what, you know, what, you know, what, just mermaids, you know, changelings, all this stuff. And I'm thinking, man, this is a deep, deep field that I haven't even touched, you know. And right. I'm glad that now we have some people like that, actually.
Well, it's like your question that you brought up the other night on your show, Lighting the Void. What's we folks? You have no idea. I know a little bit about wee folk. I know Lady Anne knows about wee folk. And then you know, there's experiences of people that we've talked to that can go really into depth about this stuff isn't lore. This stuff actually happens. And when you talk to some people in their testimony and they're just kind of putting their hands up going, I don't know if I can go through this experience again and tell you about it, something happened. And it's with, you know, little pudgewuckies and little tiny people and No. Again, we're going back to the small little things that can sneak up on you. That's scary. That's really scary. Yeah, I'm excited about being able to share as much as we can over at the Fringe FM. I'm totally stoked, excited, and whatever other word you want to put into it. And I know that Lady Anne is too. Aren't you, Lady Anne?
Yeah, I am. That's for sure.
You need to pour me some more coffee. No.
Sorry, I finished it all over there.
We're glad to have you both, man. And you've already, you know, you're already getting fans already, you know, because I like to make promos. And the thing about the Fringe FM is all of the tools that we use, the training and tools and technology, I like to share it with everybody. Really, like, use things as a community and teach each other and change this whole paradigm. You know, it's not about we've got the edge on anything. It's about let's change this thing. And that's what I want the Fringe FM to be. I mean, in all honesty, that's what I want it to be. I want some radio hosts, once they get syndicated and they're on all these different terrestrial stations for the first time in their life, and they're like, you know, if it wasn't for the Fringe FM, I wouldn't be there. I wouldn't have figured out what I needed to do technically. I wouldn't have known about that free software or podcasts that get put up on PBX that get paid, like the Moth podcast. If you go to a PBX, you have to pay them a lot of money to use their podcast. You do.
You
can get that way if you get noticed. And I just want, there's so much talent out there. And I've told you guys this, and I really believe this to the bottom of my heart. The thing that makes me want to cry sometimes is wasted talent. You know, people that don't believe absolutely. They have it. Or they never get to express it.
And, you know, I know that Lady Anne knows that this is my philosophy. And if you haven't heard this yet, and I work closely with Sean Forker over at Super NRML. My philosophy is none of this is about me. This isn't about me wanting the popularity. This isn't about me wanting to have my picture posted all over the place and recognize. It's not. My whole purpose of this is to share information and listen to information that comes to me. And like I said earlier, we all get to put this together. I am so much more, and I know Lady Anne is this way too. I am so much more a team player than I am just a solo artist out there doing my own thing. I love to work with people in this field. And I don't want the focus to be solely on me, because I think it takes all of us for that spotlight to make us all shine. So that was one gravitational point as to why I wanted to come to Fringe, just because of the fact that I know that's your philosophy too. This isn't about you. You're willing to share whatever you have with other people that have a talent or a passion. They don't necessarily have to have a talent, but if they have a passion, believe me, that passion shows.
Yeah.
And it shows bright. And I gravitated towards that too. And it's about them just as much as it is, you know, about the lady down the street that had a strange ghost knocking on her door. I want to talk to her. And so, no, it's not about me at all. And it's not about Lady Anne either.
It's about me. Yeah, no, I'm just playing. but I think...
The Al Joe Show.
Well, I mean, okay, honestly, I'm going to be real with you here. And I do this because I love it too, but... When I was a little kid, kids do things for attention, and I was kind of swatted away, you know. You just want attention, that's bad. You just want attention, that's bad. Yet, I don't think it's bad at all. I think it's a part of love, and people should get the attention that they want and need in some type of way, if that's why you're doing it. And I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's also okay to do it just because it's fun and because you want to share the information. You're right. I mean, they're speaking of talent, like Forker. There's a lot of people out there that have just so much talent. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, I'm privileged to be able to at least get to know them. And You know, you brought up Shannon LeGros the other day. If it wasn't for Shannon LeGros, and, you know, she went through her startup too. You know, she joined in with Sasquatch Chronicles and started there. And, you know, she kind of broke it off herself and said, okay, what can I do? If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here. Lady Anne wouldn't be here. We wouldn't even know each other. I wouldn't know Forker. I wouldn't know you. Right. And I owe her a debt of gratitude, and she just doesn't make it. She's like, no, this has nothing to do with her. And I'm like, it has everything to do with you. If it wasn't for you, I would not have had all these doors open for me in something that I absolutely love to do. And like I told you the other day, in a private conversation, I love doing the news.
Yeah.
I absolutely love doing the news. I love to research and go through stories and, oh, you know what? Fringe listeners would like to hear about this. This is great. And I'll record it and we do the news, you know? So I get a lot out of it. And it's more than just the monetary thing. It's just a self-satisfaction thing. Okay, so enough of boasting about ourselves and patting ourselves on the back. And we just want to give everybody a hearty handshake, a pat on the back, and the warm glow of victory, right?
Amen to that.
Nothing else to add, Lady Anne?
I mean,
she's sitting here with her feet up on the couch. I can't believe you. You're just
you
kind
can
of sitting
turn
there.
Off your remote viewing. Thank you very much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless we want to, you know, give a shout out to Shannon and congratulate her on her 200th episode.
Yeah. 200 episodes will be next Thursday. So good for her.
Yeah.
So, and we'll kind of wrap this up, but, you know, Joe, you talk about consciousness, and this is one of your more elite, more favorite subject matters to talk about. So we were going to do an episode at some point here at the Caravan about the consciousness of not only the universe, but about the plant life around us.
Ooh.
And especially in forests, because, you know, you talk about the haunted forest and all that. What makes it that way? And somebody had posted, you know, this beautiful video of this tree in the Amazon, wherever this tree is, and it develops a seed that is designed with wings so that it can glide through the forest and transplant somewhere else.
Wow.
And I immediately responded going, and you mean to tell me that plants don't have a consciousness and understand the environment in which it exists in order to develop its seed, in order to travel on the air and move somewhere else? I thoroughly believe that, yes, there is a consciousness. How does a plant know to develop a leaf that looks like a hummingbird so that it attracts hummingbirds to it? It doesn't have eyes. It doesn't have brain. How did this plant develop itself to mimic a hummingbird? There has to be some sort of consciousness there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Lady Anne and myself would go into the entire root system of a forest that all roots are interconnected, just like one of those pedestal boxes, you know, for phone lines, and you see the repairman, and it's just a plethora of wires in there. Everything is connected, and all your root systems are connected, and there might be just one centralized tree that is the dominant one, and everything revolves around it, and it's got this energy source, and if it's a negative energy source that comes within the forest, well, it's going to take you out. And we're going to do an episode on that, but I hope to get some input from you about consciousness and living things around us.
I would
other
tell
than
you
animals.
Definitely a good person to talk to about that if it would be Gordon mm-hmm. White. And of course he's a magician, mm-hmm. he's a chaos magician, but he's big mm-hmm. big into animism, okay, and the ideas mm-hmm. of that everything has a spirit and everything is alive, everything. And I'm not just talking about a rock. I mean, this guy, he'll go into an area and he will bless that area, even if it's a city. He believes everything gets consciousness eventually. It's kind of hard to explain, mm-hmm. and I don't want to speak for him, but he would be a perfect guest for that. That would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that. And, well, I'm writing this down as we're talking so that I can reach out and make a contact, because I need somebody to back me up on this.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, science will tell you that it's adaptive environments and stuff. You know, it's just evolution, but I don't believe that for a second. There might be a part of that to it, but there's just too much stuff, too much intuition there too.
And we're not going to do a show on that right now. This is just a teaser, and you know, our listeners can look forward to that in the near coming future, because I've had already responses when I brought this up as a, you know, up and coming show, and I've already had responses come back to me going, "You're nuts. You're not going to tell me a tree has consciousness." I'm like, well, this will be a fun debate then. So, well, those are things to look forward to. And of course, we don't make enemies. This is going to be a fun debate. And that's it. And maybe I can learn something from their side, and maybe they can learn something from my side. But that's how it is. All right. It's time to go feed the horses, Lady Anne. Go get the oats and put the feed bags on. Mm-hmm. We'll feed the horses and blow the candles out and call it a night over here at the Caravan. Joe, thank you so much for stopping by. This has been an absolute pleasure. And I will end on this note that it fills the cockles of my heart to have a friend like you in this business. It's very much appreciated, and it's very highly valued. So thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, that's, I don't know what to say. Now, thanks for having me.
All right. We will talk next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And yeah, stay tuned. It's going to be interesting. So bye, Lady Anne. You can say goodbye.
Good night,
Duke Olivance. And thank you.
Good night, Duke Olivance and Joe.
From childhood's hour, I have not been as others were. I have not seen as others saw. I could not bring my passions from a common spring. From the same source I have not taken my sorrow, I could not awaken my heart to joy at the same tone. And all I loved alone. Then, in my childhood, in the dawn of a most stormy life, was drawn from every depth of good and ill the mystery which binds me still. From the torrent or the fountain, from the red cliff of the mountain, from the sun that round me rolled in its autumn tint of gold, from the lightning in the sky as it passed me flying by, from the thunder and the storm and the cloud that took the form when the rest of heaven was blue, of a demon in my view.